Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and thank you for tuning in. So glad you are choosing to spend a little bit of time with me. I'm talking to another urologist today, and actually, I should say, you know, I record these in a certain order, and I probably release them in a different order. So maybe this is the first urologist I've talked to that you're listening to. But anyway, I've been interviewing a number of them lately, and I love talking to doctors, medical providers who are really passionate and educated about helping with sex, because plenty of doctors don't talk about sex or don't deal with it directly. So I love finding these specialists who have some really valuable information about how medical treatment can be relevant to some sexual concerns. So Dr. Lamia Gabal is my guest today. She's a urologist with some specialty in pelvic floor and reconstruction, whose practice is actually, I think she said, 70% women. So today we are talking pretty specifically about the kinds of things that might bring women to a urologist, all the kinds of things that she sees, and then what are some of the treatment options? What does this look like? So if you've got anything like this going on, or if it turns out when you're having coffee with a friend, you hear about this, you'll have some information should you ever need it. Hopefully you will enjoy. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Dr. Gabal, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about sex.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about sex all the time, but I'm always excited to talk to medical providers, you know, because it's so hard to get really good information to people. So I love finding doctors who are passionate about this stuff, because not all of them are.
No, and not everyone knows the stuff that we do in our specialty. It's fun to talk about. I love helping people with this.
Yeah. And do you mind speaking just a little bit about how you ended up in urology and what sort of passion drew you there? And
no problem. So believe it or not, I did not grow up thinking I was going to be a urologist.
Oh, come on. In kindergarten, that's not what you
I know, right? It was kind of thrust upon me in medical school as we do our third year rotations. And quite honestly, I tried to give it away. No one would take it. I wanted plastic surgery and ENT, and I got plastic surgery and urology. So no one would trade. And it was literally my last rotation of my third year. And it turns out I'm so happy that I did it. It was fantastic. And, you know, it's an amazing specialty for people who like surgery, but also don't necessarily want to be operating at 2 a.m. all the time. So it's a good lifestyle in that respect. And there needed to be more women. When I graduated my residency, only 4% of board certified urologists were female. Mm. We are now working on about 9 or 10% of board certified urologists being female. And urologists are traditionally thought of as male gynecologists.
Right.
But we're not. We deal with much more than that. You know, we deal with kidney stones, bladder cancer, and men and women get all of those things. My specialty, I have a subspecialty board certification in female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery as well. So that's extra training. And so the majority of my practice actually is female. 70% of my patients are women because I put things back after they fall out, after childbirth. And so it's one of the things that I'm so happy that I can help people with. But it's turned out to be a very, very good decision.
Yeah. Well, and I'm specifically interested in talking to you about the female, I mean, however we want to define female, but female bodied, you know, where people go to your urologist, what kind of conditions do they have? What kind of, I mean, you were just starting to touch on it, but what are the various kinds of sexual issues that women might have?
It's also intertwined, right? And our sexuality has so much to do with how we view ourselves, right? As a person. But also, you know, for urology, we deal a lot with urinary incontinence, urinary tract infections, those kinds of things in women. Mm-hmm. And so I've had so many women who come to me leaking urine, say they don't want to have sex with their partner because they're embarrassed about it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then also, you know, just so fixing that sometimes helps a woman's sexuality. But the genitourinary tract, I mean, that's all one thing. Mm-hmm. So we also can deal with orgasmic dysfunction, not just urinary incontinence, but the sexual health part of it that goes along with female sexual dysfunction. And then libido issues, you know, are something that can be dealt with as well. Female sexual dysfunction has long been this sort of trash can diagnosis, like one size fits all, and it really doesn't.
Yeah.
There's so many different types of female sexual dysfunction. For men, it's kind of all out there, literally, right? It's
like, yes.
Literally. It's erectile dysfunction, we fix it, yay, they move on their way. And usually we can fix it now, you know, in this day and age. But for women, there's a lot more nuance to that. And so, you know, dealing with the hormonal changes are a big part of it. Dealing with orgasmic dysfunction, which sometimes is hormonal, but could also be pelvic floor dysfunction, which is pain, you know, with intercourse. The thinning of the vaginal tissues is a big thing. You know, as women get older,
right,
also cause sexual dysfunction. And then prolapse or incontinence, you know, when the pelvic organs prolapse from the vagina after childbirth, that can make things difficult or painful, as well as recurrent urinary tract infections. If a woman has a UTI after sex, she's going to not want to have sex anymore. And so these are all things that we deal with and that usually can be addressed and fixed.
Okay. And what, I mean, some of these things you're listing, I'm imagining that some women would just go to their gynecologist. Are they equally equipped to deal with this, or where do you draw a line between gynecology and urology?
Sure. That's a very good question. And there is a lot of overlap with what I do with, say, what a urogynecologist might do. And we sort of overlap in the subspecialty of female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery. So if you come to that specialty as a urologist, you can also treat men, right? It's something that I've done in my training.
Okay.
But if you come to that specialty as a gynecologist, you know, you may have other expertise where they're able to do hysterectomies, and that's not something that I've done in my training. But you're right, there's a lot of overlap. Not every gynecologist does what I do,
yeah,
and not every urologist does what I do.
Right, right.
So it is definitely a subspecialty, but you can come to it from either direction.
Okay. So if we want to dive a little bit deeper into the kinds of conditions that might bring a woman to your office, is it useful? I mean, here's where my brain goes. Tell me, is it useful to think about the kinds of things that people have their whole life versus conditions that develop due to childbirth or age? Is that it? Or is there some other way you might categorize the kinds of things that bring people in?
Well, I mean, the majority of my patients probably are post-childbirth age.
Okay.
But I do get plenty of younger women who come in because of painful sex. And that's usually from a disorder called pelvic floor dysfunction. And that can have a high association with sexual trauma, PTSD that can develop from that, you know, as a younger child. So we have a fair amount of younger patients who come in with pelvic floor dysfunction and dyspareunia. That's the medical term for painful sex. But we also see women of childbearing age, you know, who may have recurrent urinary tract infections. And, you know, I treat that as well. I mean, it really just sort of spans the spectrum.
Right.
Chance that I'll be seeing. And then as women get older and they're done having kids, then yes, the pelvic organ prolapse, you know, is a big issue. Urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, which I didn't mention earlier, but is also unfortunately very common with pelvic organ prolapse and with childbirth trauma, the trauma to the vaginal canal. So these are all things that play into a woman's sexuality, right? If you're leaking urine or poop, you kind of don't feel.
You probably don't want to have sex. Yeah.
And so these are things that we can address and that we can fix.
Okay. So before I ask you a little bit about some of the treatment approaches to these things, or maybe even before that, what women would expect in terms of being evaluated. I'm curious your thoughts about how much people in your profession are talking about sex versus other doctors, or like where does sex intersect this in terms of your conversations with patients and maybe training you've had to have for that? Because I know, you know, it's always surprising to me, but how few doctors really want to talk about sex with people.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of great training in that either in medical school or even in residency. It's something that I've had to seek out after my, you know, residency. And I think, again, in doing my subspecialty, I've realized that sexuality definitely dovetails into what I do. And so I have sought out a lot of extra training. And quite honestly, I have to tell you that as I get older, you know, it's a little bit of it is self-serving. I'm like, and if I have these questions, then I have patients too, right?
Right, right.
So I'm going to make myself better and my friends better, and I'm going to make my patients better. Like, it's, yeah. But again, like some of it may have to do with maybe a male doctor not feeling comfortable asking a woman about her sexuality. I think, especially in a patient who's older, people just assume that they're not sexually active. But I always ask, especially my intake, you know, are you sexually active? Whether the patient is, you know, 15 or 90, you know.
Right, right.
Because it really does play into their healthcare and the decisions that we're going to make and how it affects their body.
Yeah.
So I always ask, and I have to say, it probably takes a special kind of personality to do what I do as well.
Yeah.
So I've never been shy about this stuff. And I find it interesting and fascinating and fun to talk about. So yes, I always ask about it. I feel like it's an important part of the conversation between what I do and my patients. But it's not something, you're right, that every doctor will bring up. Some of them don't have time. Some of them don't feel comfortable. Or some may just assume that it has nothing to do with what they're talking about when it really does.
Right. All right. So you already mentioned a couple of things that people might notice, like pain or incontinence, or I suppose even prolapse. Is there anything else that people might be experiencing, women might be experiencing, that they should think about seeing a urologist?
Well, urinary tract infections within our
Okay.
Super common, and sometimes has to do with constipation, sometimes does have to do with pelvic prolapse or vaginal atrophy, which is, you know, the thinning of the vaginal tissues. So there's lots of different reasons why that might happen. Kidney stones also are part of that.
Oh, right, right.
Kidney stones can get infected and cause recurrent urinary tract infections. So in my opinion, I feel like it's best to see a urologist if you're having recurrent urinary tract infections, because most of those things, if found, can also be addressed, you know, by the urologist.
Okay.
If someone sees blood in their urine, that's not normal. That's always something that they should see a urologist for. And then, yes, the things we talked about earlier, the urinary incontinence. Fecal incontinence is something that not every urologist can treat. But again, with my subspecialty, that's something that I treat very commonly.
Mm-hmm. And so what does a visit, like the initial visit to your office, kind of look like? What's involved in assessing somebody's concerns?
So several parts, you know, the history is super important, right? So if someone's coming to me for sexual dysfunction, I'm going to sit down with her or him and find out from them, you know, what is their specific issue? Is it that they can't orgasm? And if so, have they ever had an orgasm? Or is it primary or secondary? Is it more that they don't have a desire to have sex and their partner, you know, mismatched libidos with them and their partner? You know, there's so many different things that can play into it. So a careful history is super important. And then a physical exam. And it's so always so surprising to me when my patients say, well, I actually didn't know you were going to examine me. And maybe they've seen a couple other doctors and they never had a pelvic exam.
Yeah.
And I have to explain to them, no, this is super important. Like, I need to know if your anatomy is normal. I need to test your sensation. you know, make sure nothing's falling out, test the pelvic, you know, the muscle tone, the pelvic muscle tone. There's so many things that are so important with what we're talking about. So physical exam is super important. I mean, it's something that can't really be skipped. And with the pandemic, we were trying to go more, and in fact, we still do a lot of telehealth.
Right.
And I think it's okay for certain things, but I was very frustrated in doing it for new patients. So we've actually stopped doing it for new patients because, like, I need to look at someone's urine and see if there's any blood or if they have an infection. I need to scan their bladder to make sure they're not leaving urine behind. I need to examine them. It gets really frustrating to practice good medicine without being able to actually see the patient.
Yeah, exactly. Not being in the same room with a patient, that does seem like, yeah, I get that check-in visits and questions and all that can be telehealth, but yeah, it'd be hard to do an exam.
Certainly. And I've told that.
It's like, get in front of the camera and lift your leg, right?
So labiaplasty is something that I do as well. And that would be, you know, for cosmetic reasons. And I've had a couple of patients who've wanted to do it virtually. And I'm like, I'm happy to meet you virtually to see if we mesh, but I'm not doing an exam, you know, of your labia over FaceTime. I just,
yeah. I don't think
that's not what it was intended for.
No.
And if you like me, I'm happy for you to come in for me to examine you so that we can go to the next step. It's like a first date, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's online dating.
I'm intrigued hearing that you would talk to people about libido issues and anorgasmia, because I would not have thought of those as medical.
Well, I mean, there are certain things that can be done for that. Libido especially can be fixed with testosterone replacement. And again, that's something new that I've only learned of. And in my practice, we offer bioidentical hormone pelleting. And testosterone is super important in women. Mm-hmm. Again, in medical school, I never learned this, but it's actually the primary hormone in women. So even though it's much higher levels in men, and people think, oh, well, women only have estrogen, but that's not true. When you measure estrogen and testosterone in women, the testosterone is actually measured at a higher level for most women who are in their childbearing years. So it's super important for sex drive, for muscle mass to fat ratio, for brain fog, for just so many different things. And so even for orgasms, for men and women, right, we have to have a certain amount of testosterone on board. And to speak to that, you know, I had a woman who had her pellets done because she wanted more energy and she was very depressed. And it really helped her sense of well-being, but she didn't have a partner and she stopped doing the pellets because she's like, I just feel too sexual. I don't want to.
I'm just walking around frustrated.
Yeah. But yeah, she was very frustrated because she didn't have a partner. So she stopped doing her pellets, which I was sad for her because it helped her to feel so much better overall, right? But testosterone is a big part of anorgasmia and libido. There are other neurologic reasons, perhaps also for anorgasmia. And again, it depends on if it's a primary or a secondary issue, mm-hmm. but hormone levels have a lot to do with that. There is a procedure that we can offer called an O-shot, which I don't know, I'm sure you're familiar with that, but the O-shot is PRP, where we take the patient's blood, we spin it down into a small amount, which contains the healing factor. It's a very small amount, which contains platelet-rich plasma. And then I re-inject it into the G-spot on the vaginal wall. And it helps kind of rebuild nerve endings and can help significantly with orgasmic dysfunction. And I'm just now starting to get into stem cells and amniotic fluid and all the regenerative stuff that can also be done for these things. It's so exciting. Regenerative medicine, I mean, we've only just hit the tip of the iceberg for what can be done with regenerating human tissue. It's super exciting right now going on.
Hey, we're going to just take a short little break here, and I want to let you know about Intimacy with Ease, the method that helps otherwise happy couples create a sex life that is fun, easy, light for both people. So if you are an otherwise happy couple, if sex is the elephant in the room or sex is the little bit of the challenge for you guys, you may want to check this out. You can go to intimacywithease.com and you'll see information there. You'll see short videos. You'll have access to a full webinar about it, all kinds of information to let you know if this would be the right thing for you. is there a consensus around what a woman's testosterone level should be and how that gets measured? Because I think even for men, it's a little bit variable, right, in terms of how people see this. And I thought there wasn't, I don't know, enough data or something about where a woman should be.
You're right. There's absolutely no consensus. And if you talk to two doctors, you'll get three opinions. So basically, you just, when I talk to my patients, you know, you tell them that this is what we're shooting for. And, you know, there's no set normal levels. But, you know, in my traditional Western medical urology training, when we look at even male testosterone levels, I'm doing air quotes right now and you can't see.
Yeah, right.
So normal is considered 250 to say 1200. I mean, that's a ridiculous, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And we don't even have age adjusted normals by this day and age, which is also stupid. And so we know that as a man gets older, just like as a woman gets older, right, our hormone levels decrease. But why is that normal? Why do we have to live with that? And, you know, there's all kinds of other things that we don't live with, you know, and, you know, like it or not, people get Botox and fillers and plastic surgery and all these other things in order to see and to look and feel younger. So hormones also play into that. And honestly, it's not just for aesthetics. I mean, the brain function, the heart function, your kidney function, your skin function, your hair, all of these things were meant to function with normal younger hormone levels. So in men, when we do the pelleting, we actually are trying to aim for 950 to 1100, which is not what we were trained to do in Western, you know, traditional medicine. And in women, we actually try to get above from about 100 to 150. And again, that's higher than we are usually trained for in traditional Western medicine, but it really is a level where women feel better. And I'll tell you personally, I've done it and I'm still doing it. And it's helped my brain fog, my mood, orgasms. I mean, everything. It just has made things so much better and more even.
And when you say pelleting, I'm imagining, are these inserted? Are these ingested? Like how does this actually work? Because there's different ways of receiving testosterone, right?
Yes, yes. And so these are tiny little rice pellets that we would implant under the skin of the butt, just at the very top of the buttocks. And it's done in women about every 3 to 4 months and in men every 4 to 5 months. In women, we can also do estrogen as well. It's estrogen and testosterone if the estrogen is also needed. And then really with the bioidentical hormones, there's much less of a risk for side effects. What we found with the synthetic hormones is that there is an inflammatory byproduct at the very end, a metabolite that increases total body inflammation. And we know that total body inflammation is not good, right?
Right.
And what causes a lot of bad things, including a higher risk for heart attacks and strokes and cancers, all of those things that people associate with hormone replacement, where truly, if you're using bioidentical hormones, there is not that inflammatory metabolite, that end product. And so they're much safer. When you do the pelleting, you're getting a more even amount as opposed to trying to do a gel or a cream on a daily basis or even the patches, you know? There's a lot of different ways to replace either testosterone or estrogen. But this is what we feel works best. That's what we do in our practice. And we've had a lot of success, both personally as well as for our patients.
Right, right. Okay. And then I did want to spend a little bit of time. You've mentioned prolapse a few times.
Yes.
And I did interview somebody, it was probably a year ago, on prolapse. But I would love to hear more about, well, I guess a refresher for anybody who didn't hear that episode about what it is, how it happens, but then especially about some of the treatment options.
Yeah. So pelvic organ prolapse is super common. And I tell my patients, as long as women keep having babies, I am going to continue to be in business. It's just something that happens with childbirth. And it tends to run in families. It is more common if you've had vaginal deliveries, but even just with being pregnant, that can increase the risk. The number of pregnancies increases the risk, and also just age and gravity. and being upright, you know, and also weight can increase the risk because all of those things put pressure on our organs and things can fall through the vaginal wall. So that could be the bladder, the uterus, or where the uterus used to sit, which is the small intestines, can be falling down, and then also the rectum. And it can cause difficulties emptying the bladder, difficulties emptying the bowels, and all of those things can increase the risk for urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, as well as urinary tract infections, and also in the most severe form can cause kidney dysfunction. I've seen women with things literally falling out. They'll never fall out to the floor. I always tell my patients, don't worry. It's not going to fall out on the floor. You'll never have to pick it up off the floor. But it can get to the point where it's actually pinching off the tubes, the ureters that come down from the kidneys, and can cause kidney damage, you know, in its most severe form. So, you know, these are things that happen as we get older, can be treated with either a pessary. A pessary is kind of an old-fashioned treatment, but it's like a diaphragm, a big giant plastic ring that goes inside the vagina to push everything back in place. And it has to be taken out. If you're going to have sex, it has to be taken out at least every 6 weeks, cleaned and put back in. And so some women really like it because it can delay or prevent the need for surgery, and it just puts everything kind of back and it's easier to pee and poop. But some women really hate it because of the maintenance, or it doesn't stay in, or there's some possibly pressure or discomfort associated with it. So surgery is also an option. Unfortunately, there's no exercises or anything that's been shown to help put things back in place, short of standing on your head. You know, that is something.
Yeah, walking on your hands all the time.
Exactly. But then it just falls right back out as soon as you stand on your feet. So surgery is an option, and that's something that I do very commonly in my practice. Cystocele repairs, rectocele repairs, slings for incontinence. You know, those are all the things that we offer our patients, and they work very well. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, though, is that they'll come back maybe 15, 20 years after having one and say, you know, I had this done before. And I explained to them that just like a facelift or anything else, you know, everything sags. And so, you know, there's no way really to prevent that. We don't really expect it to last the rest of your life. We hope that it lasts at least 15 to 20 years. But especially for my younger patients, I counsel them to expect to have it done again at some point in their lifetime.
Okay. So something like the rectum or the bladder, what's that do? Sort of collapse in and lean against the vaginal canal? Or I mean,
so if you look at the anatomy of the vagina, the front of the vaginal wall is actually the bladder. It's indiscernible from the bladder wall, right? And the back of the vaginal wall is the rectum. Mm-hmm. So it's basically just invaginating, for lack of a better word, into the vagina. It protrudes out through the vaginal wall.
Right. It doesn't break through the wall, though, right? No. It's just pushing and sort of making a... Okay.
Exactly. So when I do a pelvic exam, and sometimes it's tough to tell, especially on the anatomy of the patient, but because of my experience level and where the prolapse is located, I can usually tell if it's the small intestines, the bladder, the rectum, and those things may also present with different symptoms. It's not uncommon to have two or all three of those things, you know, coming out at the same time.
Mm. So if something is prolapsing, something else may be also. Yeah. And how would somebody realize, I mean, I guess you said recurrent UTIs could be a sign of this, but what's likely to be the symptomology that somebody might say, oh, I wonder if I prolapse?
Yeah, many women don't have any symptoms at all. And I will occasionally have patients who come in and say, my gynecologist told me I have prolapse and you know, I'm just coming to have it checked out. And after we have this long discussion, turns out they really don't have any symptoms. So just because there's prolapse doesn't necessarily mean anything needs to be done about it.
Okay.
But it's good to know that it's there and good to know what to watch for when it does need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But many women will come in saying that they felt something in the shower, you know, and they were scared, you know, it's kind of scary to feel something there. They don't know if it's a tumor or what's going on. So they'll come in for an evaluation, or the incontinence that we were talking about before.
Right.
Pain with intercourse is something that happens more from the actual infections or from the pelvic floor spasms that sometimes can be associated. But prolapse in and of itself is not generally painful.
Does it normally impede intercourse?
Well, it depends. if someone's constipated, then yeah, actually I've had some patients say that my husband says he feels something there. Or if the uterus is coming down, they can hit the cervix more easily. So, and again, depending on the size of your partner, it might make a difference.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, with prolapse comes vaginal laxity, and that's the reason why things are falling out, because the vagina is widened from childbirth. And so one of the benefits of the surgery is that things become more tight, and it actually can be a benefit for sexual function as well, for the patient as well as for her partner.
And then UTIs,
yes.
I mean, if it isn't caused by one of these other kinds of conditions, what are treatment options for that?
So for recurrent urinary tract infections, generally we want to make sure that there's nothing else causing it. If a patient comes into my office with that diagnosis, I'm going to do a physical exam. I'm going to most likely order an ultrasound of the kidneys to make sure there's no stones or any backup of urine into the kidneys. I'm also going to want to do what's called a cystoscopy, which is looking inside the bladder with a little scope in order to make sure that there's no tumors or stones or ulcers or anything else inside the bladder that may be contributing. So a lot of times what we'll do with the UTIs is just to treat the patient with good sort of sexual hygiene, and also make sure that they are, you know, not constipated, and make sure that they're pooping regularly, that they're not, that they're taking lots of fiber, drinking lots of water, because constipation really can increase the risk for a urinary tract infection. And make sure that they pee before and after sex, use lots of lubrication. And especially for my postmenopausal patients, I make sure they're not using anything that says warming or flavored, because although that sounds like a great idea and lots of fun, it may cause more irritation and then set up for more of an infection, more inflammation in that area. But urinating before and after and using lots of lubrication, and then sometimes we also will prescribe antibiotics after intercourse, can be helpful.
Okay.
But probiotics are super helpful if a woman wants to take probiotics preventatively, because that helps to normalize the bacteria that are in the vagina. Mm. That's where all the bacteria come from. It's very normal for us to have bacteria in our vaginas, but there has to be a good balance. And so taking probiotics can be helpful. Certain supplements like cranberry and D-mannose and combinations of those things have also been shown to help prevent certain types of urinary tract infections.
And then I think my last question is about sexual pain.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about the pelvic floor dysfunction, or somebody has vaginismus. You've talked about prolapse probably isn't painful, but I'm just sort of curious about the gamut of kinds of conditions that can cause pain and how you distinguish between those. Because, you know, I think statistics are that women see 6 or 7 doctors before getting a really good diagnosis about what's causing pain for them.
Yeah, it's very sad, actually, that by the time they get to me, they have seen several other doctors who either, you know, don't have the expertise or, you know, just don't want to deal with it, because it can be time consuming. And usually women are sort of at their wit's end with this, right?
Right, like, right.
Want to be having sex, but it's, you know, it's not fun for them, and it becomes a huge issue in their relationship. So, you know, pelvic floor dysfunction is probably the most common thing that I see in my practice with dyspareunia that causes dyspareunia or painful sex. And that's just a spasm of the pelvic floor muscles, which can range from very mild spasm to, you mentioned vaginismus, where the vagina doesn't even open to allow anything, not even a finger inside. That's pelvic floor dysfunction at its most severe. The treatment options for that, you know, range from soaking in a tub or putting heat on the area. Muscle relaxants can be super helpful. And sometimes we prescribe things like lorazepam or baclofen that can help relax those muscles. And then pelvic floor physical therapy is a mainstay in my practice.
Right. I refer to PT all the time.
Yes. It's so helpful. And again, like so many of these women and men for that matter, who come in, maybe not with painful sex, but with pelvic pain, you know, they've never heard of this. And so when I talk to them, I say, you know, it sounds weird, it sounds hokey, but I promise you that everyone that has it done says they wish they would have done it ages ago, because on women, they go through the vagina, and men, they go through the rectum. And these are specially trained pelvic floor physical therapists. You can't go to Joe Blow PT guy for your back because he doesn't know what he's doing for this, you know? And it's just super helpful for them and for their relationships. So we do refer a lot of patients for pelvic floor PT.
Are there other causes of pain that come to mind?
Again, the postmenopausal vaginal atrophy is a huge reason. And then a lot of younger women on birth control, actually, this is an underdiagnosed issue because the birth control can cause, I mean, one of the ways that it works is it causes some thinning of the vaginal tissues. And that can cause a change in the pH. And so putting a little topical testosterone or a mix of topical testosterone with estrogen works wonders for those patients as well.
That's good to hear because I know anecdotally, I hear in my sex therapy practice, people struggling with side effects from birth control, but I haven't really seen research to back that up. I mean, I guess I'm not combing it every week either, but I certainly hear complaints either about some discomfort or about lower libido.
Yeah. And of course, lower libido is one of the ways we know that birth control helps. If you don't have sex, you're not going to get pregnant. But there, you know, whether you see that as a bonus or a side effect, it is something that can happen with birth control, unfortunately. Yeah.
So where can people find you on the web? Or, you know, I mean, obviously you practice in one particular location, but what if they want to know more?
Yes. So my website is drgabal.com. That's drgabal.com. And my practice is Prestige Medical Group. And it is me as well as another urologist, Dr. Trofimenko. She specializes in sexual health. And we also have a nurse practitioner and a PA. I also should put a plug in for Gainswave because they are the ones who connected us and I'm grateful. So we do some shockwave therapy in our office, both for male and female sexual dysfunction for regenerative medicine to regenerate the tissues. But you can read about all that on our website. And I'm in Santa Ana, California, but I'm happy to talk to people by telephone or by web appointment, at least initially, as we had talked about earlier.
I don't want to cut it short. Do you want to say anything about the shockwave treatment since we didn't talk about that?
Yeah, I think that this is a whole new avenue for regenerative medicine, both for men and women. We've had such success in our practice for men with erectile dysfunction. And it's really interesting that if I take a 50-year-old guy who has very mild ED and maybe takes Viagra on occasion, and we do 6 treatments of the shockwaves to the penis in order to rebuild younger, healthier tissue, I can get that guy probably off of his Viagra, and it helps incredibly well. But if we take a man who's 80, and who hasn't had sex in many years and now has a 50-year-old girlfriend, but is trying to regain his erections, it's very, very difficult to be able to rebuild those erections because the tissues have changed and aged so much. So finding with anything with regenerative medicine that it's important for maintenance and it's important to address the issue early on to try and get those nerve endings and blood vessels and all that good tissue to regenerate. And for women with orgasmic dysfunction, what we're finding is a combination of shockwaves with the O-shot can help to regenerate those tissues, just like in the male penis. You know, we have the analogous tissues in the vagina, in the clitoris. And so by rebuilding those tissues, it can help significantly with female sexual dysfunction as well. So again, we are just getting to the tip of the iceberg with the regenerative medicine and sexual health.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show and sharing all this great information.
Thank you for having me. That was fun. Thank you. I love talking about all of it.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. you can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.